All glorious you, Selma devotees. All glorious you, Selma devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Gauranga. First, we'd like to wish everybody happy Janmashtami, happy appearance of Krishna. So, for this morning's class, we're going to read a little bit from Srila Prabhupada's translation and commentary on the fourth text of the first chapter, the 10th canto, which is a text that Srila Prabhupada would often quote, which indicates the advantage of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And especially on this day of Janmashtami, hearing and chanting about Krishna has special potency, special spiritual advancement one can make on this day, and so one should minimize other activities and maximize the hearing and chanting about Krishna. And of course, when you hear and chant about Krishna, you're associating with Krishna. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Punashuddha Nichimukto Vinatvam Namanamino. That actually you're with Krishna when you're hearing and chanting about him, and the pastimes are actually taking place in the transcendental sound vibration. So I'll just read this verse, and then we'll talk a little bit in general about who Krishna is, a little bit in general about the events preceding Krishna's advent in this world, and hopefully we'll be able to speak a little more than that, and then about Krishna's appearance. Okay, and we only have about an hour, or less than an hour right now. So 10th canto, chapter 1, text 4. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So I'll just read this verse, and then we can do the word by word synonyms together. Nivritta tar sharubagi hamanan, Raboshadat shotra mano viramat, Kahutama shloka gunan vadat, Human virajeta vinapashugnat. So you can repeat. Nivritta. Released from. Tarshahai. Lust or material activities. Ubagi hamanat. Which is described or sung. Baba Oshadat. Which is the right medicine for the material disease. Shrotra. The process of oral reception. Manaha. The subject matter of thought for the mind. Abhiramat. From the pleasing vibrations, from such glorification. Kaha, who? Uttama shloka, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Aguna anuvadat, from describing such activities. Human, a person. Virajita can keep himself aloof. Vina, except. Pashugnat, either a butcher or one who is killing his own personal existence. Translation. Glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the parampara system. That is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false, temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except a butcher or one who is killing his own self? So we'll read some of Srila Prabhupada's purport. Actually, the purport is so long that if we read the whole purport today, that's all we would do for class. So read some of the purport. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In India, it is the practice among the general populace to hear about Krishna either from Bhagavad Gita or from Srimad Bhagavatam in order to gain relief from the disease of repeated birth and death. Although India is now fallen, when there is a message that someone will speak about Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, thousands of people still gather to hear. This verse indicates, however, that such recitation of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam must be done by persons completely freed from material desires, nivritta tarshahai. Everyone within this material world, beginning from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, is full of material desires for sense enjoyment, and everyone is busy in sense gratification. But when thus engaged, one cannot fully understand the value of Krishna Katha either in the form of Bhagavad Gita or in Srimad Bhagavatam. If we hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from liberated persons, this hearing will certainly free us from the bondage of material activities. But hearing Srimad Bhagavatam spoken by a professional reciter cannot actually help us achieve liberation. Krishna Katha is very simple. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As he himself explains, Matak Parataram Nanyat Kinchit Asti Dhananjaya. O Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. That's from the Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter, text 7. Simply by understanding this fact, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become a liberated person. But especially in this age, because people are interested in hearing Bhagavad Gita from unscrupulous persons who depart from the simple presentation of Bhagavad Gita and distort it for their own personal satisfaction, they fail to derive the real benefit. There are big scholars, politicians, philosophers, and scientists who speak on Bhagavad Gita in their own polluted way, and people in general hear from them, being uninterested in hearing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from a devotee. A devotee is one who has no other motive for reciting Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam than to serve the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore advised us to hear the glories of the Lord from a realized person, Bhagavata Paro Dhyā Bhagavata Sthāne. Unless one is personally a realized soul in the science of Krishna consciousness, a neophyte should not approach him to hear about the Lord. For this is strictly forbidden by Srila Sanatana Goswami, who quotes from the Padma Purana, Avaishnava Mukho Girnam Putam Hari Katam Ritam Shravanam Maiva Kartavyam Starpo Chishta Yata Payaha. One should avoid hearing from a person who is not situated in Vaishnava behavior. A Vaishnava is Nivritta Trishna, that is, he has no material purpose. For his purpose, only purpose, is to preach Krishna consciousness. So-called scholars, philosophers, and politicians exploit the importance of Bhagavad Gita by distorting its meaning for their own purposes. Therefore, this verse warns that Krishna Katha should be recited by a person who is Nivritta Trishna. Shukadev Goswami epitomizes the proper reciter for Srimad Bhagavatam in Parikshit Maharaj, who purposefully left his kingdom and family prior to meeting death, epitomizes the person fit to hear it. A qualified reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam gives the right medicine, Bhavoshadhi, for the conditioned souls. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore trying to train qualified preachers to recite Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita throughout the entire world, so that people in general in all parts of the world may take advantage of this movement and thus be relieved of the threefold miseries of material existence. So Omagana Timidanda Shah, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Miditam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anyway, there's many topics in this particular verse in the purport. And so the most important being, as Srila Prabhupada points out, that we should hear Krishna Katha from someone who was actually Krishna conscious, and by hearing Krishna katha from someone who was actually Krishna conscious, the material miseries can be dissipated, and we can have a taste for Krishna consciousness. And those people who are engaged in pashugnat, that is animal slaughter or killing the soul, so to speak, are those who don't have a taste, which is very interesting. Anyway, so getting on to the description of Krishna's appearance in this material world, which this verse is introducing, we're going to speak about some topics, and we're going to make some reference not only to the Srimad Bhagavatam, but to the Mahabharata story. So before Krishna's appearance in this world, the earth was overburdened by... Can someone turn that off? Because that's really disturbing. You can leave the other one on, or it's not on, actually. Before Krishna's appearance within this material world, the earth was overburdened by demoniac personalities, especially, you know, kings and other leaders like that. And the reason for that, described in the Mahabharata, is that the demons, as they usually are fighting with the demigods. And the demons, Danavas, Danus, Rakshasas, what have you, they had taken shelter of the earth planet. They were actually running away from the demigods. And they were attempting to turn the earth planet into a really demoniac place. So there's like a interplanetary war happening before the advent of Krishna. And so when the earth planet was suffering due to the, described the overburdening of the demoniac forces on the earth planet, then the earth naturally goes to Lord Brahma, who is the person in charge of this particular universe. And then Lord Brahma goes to Lord Vishnu. And of course, the way he goes to Lord Vishnu is he goes to the shore of the ocean of milk. Actually, as Srila Prabhupada describes, that in this universe, there's different types of oceans. There's an ocean of milk, ocean of yogurt. And for those of you who are like intoxication, there's actually an ocean of liquor. I don't know what type of liquor, but it's an ocean of liquor. So we may not experience these things. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we don't experience. In fact, most things we don't experience. So anyway, so Lord Vishnu is residing there. The Shivadakshai Vishnu is residing there. And Lord Brahma, along with the demigods, goes to the shore of the ocean of milk, and he recites these prayers along with the demigods called the Purusha Shukta prayers. These Purusha Shukta prayers are contained within the Rig Veda. And the Brahmins traditionally recite these Purusha Shukta prayers before they do some sort of sacrifice. And this, of course, these Purusha Shukta prayers describe particularly the universal form and how the Lord is manifest within this material world as the universal form. Universal form means that one sees all the aspects of this creation as parts of the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the glorification contained in the Purusha Shukta prayers. So Lord Brahma goes there with the demigods, and then he hears a transmission within his heart. And in that transmission, there's some instruction from the Supreme Personality of Godhead that the demigod should appear on the earth planet along with, of course, Ananta and Yogamaya, who will be appearing to help the Lord in his pastimes. Now, every time the Lord appears in this world, the Lord comes with his associates, and generally, he has the demigods appear too, just like when Lord Rama appeared many millions of years ago. Lord Rama had the demigods appear as monkeys or expand as monkeys. Some of them were expansions, some of them were direct manifestations of the demigods, some of them were sons of the demigods, but they were appeared to assist the Lord in his pastimes. In this particular case, many demigods appeared in the Lord's family, the Yadu dynasty, and other places like that. So, getting back to the Earth planet. So there was this big demon on the Earth planet. His name was Kamsa. And Kamsa, he has a very interesting history. Some people consider Kamsa the son of Ugrasena and Padmavati, because Ugrasena is his father, Padmavati is his mother. But that's not actually the case. There's a story told in the Vedic literatures. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in fact, tells this story, that Padmavati, who was Kamsa's mother, was tricked one time when this demon, of course, I don't want to say the name, but anyway, there was a demon named Drumila. Not our Drumila, of course. Drumila's not here right now. Anyway, oh, there you are.
There he is.
But that's not the same Drumila. Drumila is actually...
No, it is.
He's one of the Navayogendras, actually. You know that. One of the great devotees of the Supreme Person. Anyway, there was a demon by the name Drumila, and he took the form of Ugrasena. And taking the form of Ugrasena, he had a relationship with Padmavati, who was Ugrasena's wife. And as a result, guess what? There was a demon born. And his name was Kamsa. So Kamsa, the story of Kamsa, the background of Kamsa, is that he was originally this person named Kalinemi. And he was killed by Vishnu several times. And he was reminded of this by Narada Muni. Narada Muni reminded him of his past to help inspire him to become angrier and angrier with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you may ask, you know, why is Narada Muni stirring up the anger of the demons? Well, there's several different reasons. One reason is that he wants to see Krishna appear as soon as possible. Another reason is that in order for the demons to be killed, there has to be some animosity towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not just one demon, but Krishna came to alleviate the whole burden of the Earth planet. In fact, we find that some personalities who were apparently acting as demons were actually demigods. There is the case of Duryodhana, for example, and others. Like Duryodhana was the personality of Kali. Kali is a demigod. You know, just like he's the presiding deity of Kali Yuga. Not Kali. Kali is an incarnation of Durga, an appearance of Durga. But there's Kali, who is the Kali Yuga avatar, not avatar, but, you know, the appearance of, or the manifestation of the Kali Yuga, the presiding personality in Kali Yuga. So, anyway, so Duryodhana was actually a demigod who had that purpose to stir things up, to get people fighting with each other so that so many people could be killed in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Millions and millions of people were killed in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and practically everybody except for a handful of people were killed. So the Lord arranges sometimes for people to all be together or for people to be stirred up so that there'll be a massive, you know, devastation so that the earth can be relieved of the demoniac forces. Anyway, so Narada Muni wanted to speed up the appearance of the Lord, so he told Kamsa that story. And he said, you were killed by Vishnu several times. Fortunately, most of those times, Shukracharya brought you back to life. Shukracharya, of course, is the minister or guru of the demons. And he has this Mrityu Sanjeevani. He can actually bring people back to life. There's a whole story about that in the Vedic literatures. So, Kamsa, once upon a time, as the story goes, was driving his sister, he was driving his sister and Vasudev back from their marriage. This is part of the traditional system when the brother of the bride is driving the bride and her husband to the husband's home. And when he was driving her back from the marriage to the husband's home, then he heard a voice in the air. And that voice in the air said, the eighth son of Vasudev and Devaki is going to kill you. And so when Kamsa heard this, of course, he became very, very worried. Because nobody likes to die. Everybody wants to protect their bodies. And particularly, Kamsa, being in the materialistic conception of life, wanted to protect his body and thought that this life is everything. That's demoniac conception. So, therefore, he picked up his sword and he said, well, if the eighth child of Vasudeva and Devaki is supposed to kill me, I'll make sure that there's no children. And so he took his sword and got ready to kill Devaki. And Vasudeva then started to preach to Kamsa. And basically, he promised Kamsa that he would deliver the eighth child. And Kamsa, being pacified, Kamsa understanding that Vasudeva was actually a very religious person, would never speak a lie, he agreed to this particular deal. Of course, he was thinking originally of only killing the eighth son of Devaki and Vasudeva. But eventually he ended up killing each and every child that was produced of Vasudeva and Devaki. And the reason was that Narada Muni told him, he said, you never know how you can tell which one is the eighth son, whether they're counting down or counting up, so you better make sure you kill all of them. You understand? Because, you know, you can count 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, or you can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or you don't know. So Narada Muni actually was arranging for all of them to be killed. The reason that they were all supposed to be killed, this is actually part of the Lord's plan too. Originally, many lifetimes ago, there were these personalities called the Sadgarbhas. And they were the sons of Marichi by his wife Erna. And what happened is they committed a big offense against Lord Brahma. In the beginning of the creation, Lord Brahma was going through some, let's say, some changes, some interesting, just some interesting pastimes. Lord Brahma became interested in his daughter Vak. There's that story in the Bhagavatam. And the Sadgarbhas, they actually laughed at him. Of course, Lord Brahma eventually left that body, that is the mentality, gave up that mentality, and became further purified. So this is an indication for us that we should not criticize Vaishnavas, even though they may have some little fault. Of course, what Lord Brahma was doing was completely unacceptable, but he did the proper thing by giving up that particular body or mentality. So we find in the history of Lord Chaitanya's associates that his associates would not say anything, criticize any Vaishnava, which is very, very interesting. I was just reading about Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, who resided with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for some time in Jagannath Puri, and it's described about him that he would never even refuse to hear the criticism of any Vaishnava. So this is a very important quality. So these Sadgarbhas, they laughed at Lord Brahma, and because of that, they were cursed, and they later on became the six sons of Hiranyakasipu, six sons of Kalanemi, and Kalanemi's sons, this is a whole history, Kalanemi, of course, was originally Kamsa. They started to worship Lord Brahma. Then Hiranyakashipu felt disempowered. Why did he feel disempowered? Because he thought he was supposed to be worshipped rather than Lord Brahma. And then he cursed them to be killed by their father. He said, because you've offended me and you're not worshipping me, you're going to be killed by your father. And so therefore, that's why they were killed by Kamsa, okay? And later on, of course, in Krishna's pastimes, these sons were actually posted after they were killed. They were in Sutala. and being taken care of by Bali Maharaj, and they were given back to Devaki by Krishna, and she fed them, she purified them by feeding them her breast milk. And her breast milk was actually remnants, was Mahaprasadam. The reason for that being that before Krishna was taken to Vrindavan, he sucked the breast milk of Devaki, so then all the breast milk became Mahaprasadam. So the Sadgarbhas became purified at that particular point. So let's get on with the appearance of Krishna. So anyway, Kamsa was killing these children. Basically, he was taking them and throwing them against the wall. Horrendous demon. Throwing them against the wall, throwing them against the floor, one after the other, after they were born. So finally, the seventh son was in the womb of Devaki. And of course, that was Balaram. And he was transferred to the womb of Rohini. There's also a description by the Acharyas that Rohini actually had Balaram in her womb all along. And expansion of Balaram was in the womb of Devaki. And that expansion merged into the original Balaram in the womb of Rohini. So that's the explanation given by the Acharyas. There's some very interesting explanation given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in this regard. So therefore, everyone thought that Devaki had a miscarriage. And then sometime after that, she gave birth to Krishna. But the way she gave birth to Krishna was very interesting. That Krishna was transferred from the pure mind of Vasudev, that is the heart of Vasudev, to the heart of Devaki. When Krishna first appeared, he appeared in the Vishnu form. Devaki was very afraid when she saw this Vishnu form because she thought, this is actually maternal affection. She thought that, you know, if Kamsa sees that you're Vishnu, he's going to kill you. Now, obviously, if you think ontologically, you know, that here's Vishnu, nobody can kill Vishnu. But thinking maternally, you can see this Yogamaya was actually influencing her consciousness. So thinking maternally, she thought, well, if Kamsa sees Vishnu, he's going to kill him. So instead, she said, you must hide and become a normal baby. So then Krishna did it. And Krishna explained to Devaki that previously you and Vasudev were Prishni and Sutapa, and my name then was Prishni Garba. And then also Aditi and Kashyapa, and my name was Vamana. And so Krishna explained the whole philosophy to them. Now there's an explanation by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that Mother Yashoda actually did give birth to Krishna, and it was actually Krishna's expansion that appeared in the womb of Devaki at that point. So this is another esoteric understanding. Anyway, so what happened is that the prison doors, as we know, the prison doors opened up, and the doorkeepers fell asleep, like people do in Bhagavatam class. The locks unlocked, and Vasudev, he walked to Vrindavan from Mathura, and he exchanged the babies. He found Durga there, who he thought was the child or the daughter of Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. But actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Krishna was the son of Nanda and Yashoda. Anyway, so he brought Durga back. Kamsa and his nefarious associates hear the crying of the baby. He rushes in and takes the baby in his hands, and the baby flies up in the air and manifests 8 arms with weapons. You know, he tries to kill the baby, but the baby just like flies up, flying in the 8 arms and weapons. And he says, actually, the child that was supposed to kill you was born elsewhere. And so Kamsa repents at this particular point. That means he feels really guilty. And he frees Vasudeva and Devaki. And then Nanda Maharaj, celebrating Krishna's appearance, has a festival where 2 million cows are donated to the brahmanas. And then he goes, these are just basic stories, and then we'll read Krishna book after this. Then he goes to Mathura to pay his taxes, and when he's in Mathura to pay his taxes, he talks to his brother Vasudev. Now it's very interesting that Vasudev and Nanda Maharaj are brothers. They're actually half-brothers. The story is that Surasena, who's different than Ugrasena, Ugrasena is Kamsa's father. It's actually Drumila is Kamsa's father, but in the form of Ugrasena. So Surasena is the father is the father of Nanda Maharaj, and also he's the father of Vasudev. It's described that Surasena had a Vaishya wife as well as a Kshatriya wife. And by the Kshatriya wife, he has Nanda Maharaj, and by the Vaishya wife, he has Vasudev. All right, so they're brothers. So they go there, and they meet. And Vasudev talks to Nanda Maharaj and says, I've got news for you. Vrindavan is in danger. Or actually, at this point, Krishna is in Gokul, not the city of Vrindavan. Just to give you a little geography of the place, there's Gokul is where Krishna actually appeared. Later on, they moved to Vrindavan, and later on, they moved to Nandagram. You understand, at a certain point. So Gokul and where Radharani appeared is called Ravel. Radharani did not appear in Barshana, regardless of what they tell you when you go to Barshana. She appeared in this place called Ravel. And when Radharani appeared, it's described that Radharani was born blind. That she could not see anything. And Narada Muni said to Vrishabhanu, you should perform the birth ceremony, name ceremony, even though she's blind, because usually if there's some imperfection, you don't perform these ceremonies. And so while they were performing the ceremony, Nanda Maharaj brought Krishna, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mayi, brought Krishna to the birth ceremony. And Krishna, he crawled near Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani understood by Krishna's smell that he was there, and she opened her eyes for the first time. So anyway, so this took place in Gokul. So Vasudev, he warned Nanda Maharaj about demons. He said, something is going to happen. There'll be very inauspicious things happening. And Nanda Maharaj, taking Vasudev's words very seriously, thought, well, it's very prophetic. Let me go back to Vrindavan. Let me go back to Gokul right away and see what's happening. So he went back to Gokul. And then right after he arrived back, Kamsa had sent one of his primary associate demons. Her name was Putana. And Putana, of course, has a very interesting history, which we've told before, that Putana was previously, in a previous life, the sister of Bali Maharaj. And when Lord Vamanadeva came to cheat Bali Maharaj, because Bali Maharaj had taken away the kingdom of Indra, Putana in her previous life, Ratnamala was her name. Yeah, Ratnamala. She actually saw Vamanadeva, and she thought, I'd really like to have this boy as our son, as my son. And she was praying like that. I feel very maternal towards him. I'd like to have him as my son. And so, after a while, of course, Vamanadeva did his thing and cheated Bali Maharaj, taking 3 steps, ultimately putting the 3rd step on Bali Maharaj's head. And then she got very angry because her brother had been insulted. And she said, well, he may become my son in the future, but I want to kill him. So that's why she took birth as Putana. Anyway, so what happened was that, it's a very interesting story in the Lalita Madhava that I've noted here. Putana was sent by Kamsa to kill baby Krishna. Actually, he told her to kill all the male babies that had just been born, but not to kill the ladies. were the females. She was told to kidnap the girls and kill the boys. Hmm. So at the time she came to kill Krishna, she had already kidnapped Radharani, Lalita, Padma, Bhadra, Shaibya, and Shaima gopis, and also Chandravali. But what happened is that Chandravali, she had dropped her while she was flying by the Gokul village. So the story of Putana, I'm just going to tell the story, I guess, of two or three demons right now. So Putana, of course, took on the form of a very beautiful lady, so no one would suspect her. She was a witch, and she had the ability to transform her visage, her form, any way she wanted. Just like Sarpanaka, when she approached Lakshman and Ram, even though she was a Sarpanaka, means someone with very long nails, somehow or other she looked quite beautiful when she approached them. So in the same way, Putana assumed a very beautiful form, and she came to the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, and naturally they thought, this beautiful lady, even though we haven't seen her before, I mean, she cannot harm Krishna. She's a very attractive lady. So they let her in, and Putana asked if she could suckle Krishna, and she put Krishna on her lap, and what happened is that Krishna sucked out her life air, but as he was sucking out her life air, he closed his eyes, and the acharyas have many reasons for this particular description. One is that he was dictating something to her. Another thing is that he was closing his eyes because he didn't want to see a woman being killed, because Krishna definitely doesn't like to kill ladies. Likes to kill men, but not ladies. So he didn't want to look at her because he was the first demon being killed was a woman. Just like when Lord Ramchandra was fighting, Tataka was the first demon that he killed. And he was very reluctant. Very, very reluctant to kill her. Even though Viswamitra Muni was encouraging him. He was thinking, she's a woman, how can I kill her? And Viswamitra Muni said, dispatch her right away. Oh my God. Sorry. Dispatch her right away, because the demons get more powerful in the twilight hours. So Lord Ram actually did that. He sort of closed his eyes while he was firing an arrow at her, because he really wasn't happy about the whole thing. So in the same way, Krishna closed his eyes when he was killing Putana, sucked out her life air. And when he sucked out her life air, she assumed her original form, which was gigantic, like many miles long. And it's just like so many trees were just like destroyed and houses were destroyed as she expanded her form. But remember, she also had kidnapped all these girls at the same time and had them with her. So Yogamaya, who's called Purnamashi in Vrindavan, understood this, and she wanted to situate the girls in their proper location, their proper homes. So Purnamashi, quickly, before anybody saw, she climbed up on top of Putana and grabbed the girls and put them back in their right homes. So Purnamashi, can you imagine? You can just imagine the scenario where Krishna is, of course, climbing. Krishna, of course, is on Putana. You know, little tiny Krishna in comparison to the whole size of Putana. There's some deities or let us say, paintings or statues of that in Gokul. And this little tiny Krishna on Putana's breast, you know, which is as big as, like, this whole room. This one breast is as big as the whole room. And then, it's true. I mean, you know, practically speaking, you know, can you imagine, little tiny Krishna is about as big as any of the babies here, you know, on top of that. That's the proportion, so you get an idea. And then Purnamashi is climbing up there, frantically grabbing these girls before anyone sees the girls. And, of course, Putana, by coming in touch with Krishna, by being accepted by Krishna as his mother, went back to the spiritual world. not only did she go back to the spiritual world, but her whole body, which was previously a very impure thing, became purified. So this also indicates to us that when we engage in Krishna's service, as Krishna says in the Gita, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Ramagno Brahmana Hutam Brahmatena Gantavyam Brahma Karma Samadhinam. When one makes a full offering to Brahman, when one serves Krishna, then the offering becomes Brahman, the person making the offering becomes Brahman, the whole situation becomes purified at that point. So her body actually became a spiritual body. So when the residents of Vrindavan later on burnt the body, it gave off such a nice smell that everything was just like super fragrant. Normally when you burn witches, it's not like that. You know, it's horrible smell when you burn a body. Ugh. Crematorium. But actually, this is such a wonderful smell that the whole area became fragrant. Her body was like 8 miles long, you know, humongous body. Like halfway to Durham, practically. From here. Actually, tremendous body. Anyway, so according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, each one of these demons that attempted to kill Krishna represents a particular anartha or something that we should be aware of. So Putana represents what's called the pseudo-guru. That means bogus guru. And actually Prabhupada said that's a contradiction to say that. At what's called an oxymoron. Because a guru is a guru. So you say bogus guru, it's saying no guru guru. You know, anyway, Prabhupada did point that out. So like you see in India nowadays, there's so many bogus gurus. I was watching one movie about that the other day, about the bogus gurus in India. About some reporter who went to India from the BBC, and he was going to different organizations and seeing the gurus. One guru was hugging him, and another guru was playing a synthesizer and saying that in this way I can free everybody from all the diseases. I mean, there's so many crazy things happening. So Putana represents that. Why does she represent the bogus guru? Because she looks like something that she's not when she was actually appearing as a beautiful lady. So appearances are deceptive. So that was the first demon killed by Krishna. Second demon was called the Shakatasura. Shakatasura is the cart demon that Krishna kicked over. And this is an interesting story. In the Garga Samhita, it's described in his previous life, he was the son of Hiranyaksha named Utkacha. And he went to Lomasa Rishi's hermitage or ashram, and he broke some trees there. And because he broke, cut some trees down without permission. Anyway, so. That's a lesson for all you, no cutting trees without permission here on the property. So that's actually what happened. He broke some trees there. He didn't do anything more. Actually, when I was with Prabhupada in Dallas, Texas, Prabhupada was going around the temple grounds, and then he saw that there was one tree that was actually leaning on the temple, and the devotees had cut it. And Prabhupada said, "Who has cut this?" Prabhupada got very angry. Was anyone else there at that time when Prabhupada was there? No, I don't think any of you were there. Prabhupada was so angry. I mean, it was a nice oak tree. And Prabhupada said, "Who has cut this tree?" And Prabhupada was so angry that this tree had been cut or even trimmed because it was leaning in the wrong direction. So anyway, it's an indication for us. So anyway, so he broke some trees there and he was cursed to become bodiless. The reason he was cursed to become bodiless was that he had a huge body. And that's how he broke the trees. He didn't have a chainsaw. He just had a huge body. And that's how he broke the trees. And then he fell at the Muni's feet and he begged for mercy. And the Muni told him, "In your next life, you're going to be touched by the foot of the Supreme Personality of God and thereby liberated." So he agreed to become bodiless at that particular point. So what happened is that Krishna was lying down. Mother Yashoda put Krishna down beneath the cart, and Krishna kicked this cart, and the cart flew apart. And Krishna's friends, they told Mother Yashoda, Krishna has kicked the cart apart. And she thought, you know, these little boys, they don't know what they're talking about. How can Krishna kick the cart apart? This little, you know, he's a baby, like this small or something like that. Can you imagine a little baby kicking a cart, and the cart was flying to pieces around the air? So this particular demon represents the load-carrying mentality arising out of bad habits, and also represents lethargy, dullness, and false pride. And it's described that Krishna removes this contamination by kicking aside this contamination with his feet. Okay. And one final demon we'll read, and I think that's all we'll have time for this morning, is the Trinavarta demon. So the Trinavarta demon, in his last life, he was the king of a place called Punjadesh. And his name was Sahasraksha. And so what Sahasraksha did is to enjoin with his 1,000 wives. That's all right. There's no problem with that. But if you have 1,000 wives, you should enjoy with them. But what happened is that he was enjoying, he was naked, and he appeared before Durvasa Muni with his 1,000 wives. So Durvasa Muni said, all right, because you've done this, you're cursed to live on earth for 100,000 years, and you're going to be killed by Lord Krishna. So that's the story of Trinavarta. So Trinavarta, of course, with Trinavarta, he's the whirlwind demon. He picked up Krishna, went into the air. Of course, he was a friend of Kamsa also. He picked up Krishna, went into the air, thought he was going to kill Krishna by dropping him or something like that. So as he picked up Krishna, went through the air, Krishna became heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier, because Krishna is the heaviest of the heaviest. Krishna is also the lightest of the lightest. He's all things, you know, contradictory things. And, of course, he's Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara means the controller of yoga. And as the controller of yoga, he definitely has all yogic powers, and one of them is you become heavier than the heaviest or lighter than the lightest. And so he caused Trinavarta to fall to the ground. So Trinavarta represents false pride produced by useless scholarship, which gives rise to debates and arguments, dry reasoning, and dry logical indulgences in the association of people who are attached to such things. So in other words, he was a bag of hot air. That was Trinavarta. And Trinavarta indicates, this pastime indicates, that Krishna becomes moved by the humility of his devotees, not by the pride of his devotees, who carefully avoid this fault, and he strangles this demon and removes the thorn of false pride from his devotees' endeavors and devotional service. So you see that sometimes if we're doing something for Krishna out of false pride, Krishna actually makes the arrangement that makes it very difficult for us, makes things unsuccessful, and therefore we're forced to give up our false attitude, our attitude that we're the controller or proprietor of things. So I think that's all we have time for today. Any questions or comments about Krishna's appearance? Yes. Well, the cart demon is like described as a load-bearing, you know, someone taking on a very heavy load, like a cart takes on a load. So we take on loads unnecessarily. This is called ugra karma. Like there's one interesting story when Prabhupada was first founding New Vrindavan, he went to the first sign of New Vrindavan, and the devotees had purchased a washing machine. There was no electricity there. And they were like four or five or six of them were carrying this big washing machine up the hill. And Prabhupada was laughing. He was saying, ugra karma. Now, that's not to say we shouldn't have washing machines. But what happens is that through the utilization of modern technology, which we're thinking is alleviating us from so many burdens, actually increases the burdens because you have to work hard. Like Prabhupada said, let people have cars, you know, so they can get to work, but now they have to go longer distances to work. and Prabhupada said they're traveling at neck break. I know it's breakneck, but anyway, neck break speed back and forth, and people are getting hurt and everything like that. So the uber karmic endeavors are being increased, and also we as individuals, especially in America, we put more burdens on ourselves, like debts and things like that. I mean, I think the debt ratio in America is the highest it's ever been, you know, per person. You know, credit card debt and mortgage debt and everything like that. You know, people think I only have this much payment to make for the next 40 years until I die. And so that's really what it represents, you know, Shakata Sura, is putting the burden, load carrying. Like Prabhupada's philosophy, what Prabhupada wanted was simple living and high thinking, reducing these necessities, reducing the burden. Of course, for Krishna, we can accept any sort of burden. But also we find in the Upadeshamrita, achahara, that means unnecessary endeavor, over-endeavor for mundane things. So, is that all right?